So I am a lawyer by trade. I'm licensed with the Virginia State Bar. It happened since 1996. I've been a pastor's wife for 23 years, and we've raised two awesome teenagers. So I've been in and out of the legal world since my daughter was born in 2003. I do not practice actively now, so I just need to do my little legal disclaimer and say nothing that I say today should be construed as legal advice. Okay. But I do have a heart for this. God has seen fit to provide me the most incredible opportunity to bring my legal knowledge, my education, my skills, and marry them with my passion. And the way I ended up with at the Alliance Defending Freedom was 2019, prior to COVID. Our son was a freshman at Loudoun County High School, and I started getting wind of all of these books that were in his classroom library and in the school library that had pornographic material, pornographic images, pornographic stories, and I started speaking out at the Loudoun County School Board and sharing those passages with them publicly because I thought if my 15-year-old son can read this, then you can sit here and listen to it. So that really kind of lit a fire in me as a parent. And through that, I got connected to Mike Ferris, who is our president and CEO at the Alliance Defending Freedom. He started the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Patrick Henry College. And so the Lord has just been awesome to kind of bring it all together. And so I've been able to spend the last year really kind of digging in to the issue of parental rights, which happens to coincide with where we are as a culture and just this rise in gender dysphoria among children and gender identity confusion and all of these things that are going into the schools. So I'm going to talk about what's going on behind the scenes here, because it's not just about the kids, it's about the parents who are trying to raise their kids. So we're going to talk about understanding parental rights. Well, there's a legal origin of parental rights. The Supreme Court of the United States, and I'll try not to bore you with all the, I'm a kind of a nerd, so I think this is cool. But the Supreme Court of the United States has repeatedly affirmed through a variety of cases over the last 100 years that parental rights are fundamental rights, that they're first-tier rights, like we would as Americans, like we would think about freedom of speech or freedom of religion. These are rights that can't be violated under the Substantive Due Process Clause, the 14th Amendment of the United States. And so the US Supreme Court has said, yes, parental rights are fundamental rights. They're not just an average right. And parents have the fundamental right to direct the upbringing, the education, and the healthcare of their own children. So this started with a case in 1923 with Myers versus Nebraska. And the Supreme Court found that the family's constitutional right to privacy included the right to educate their children, and that states could not unreasonably interfere with the parent's right to direct the education of their child. And then this was a big case in Pierce versus the Society of Sisters, where the Supreme Court famously declared that the child is not the mere creature of the state. Those who nurture him and direct his destiny have the right, coupled with the high duty, to recognize and prepare him for additional obligations. So this case specifically acknowledged parental rights as fundamental and applied what we call the strict scrutiny standard, which is the highest standard of legal review. And under this, any laws that conflict with parental rights, they can only violate them or set them aside if there's a compelling state interest coupled with a very narrowly tailored application to that specific interest. So it's a very high standard of judicial review. It is very difficult to meet, especially in the case of parental rights when they're at issue. And then finally, in Wisconsin versus Yoder, which was a case based on the Amish, who often take their child out of school around middle school age and teach them a vocation, and that's the way the Amish, so that they can live the Amish lifestyle. And there was public education at stake, and they were saying, no, you can't pull your kids out, even if it's because of your religion. And here, the court specifically stated that the primary role of parents in the upbringing of their children is now established beyond debate. Beyond debate, as an enduring American tradition. This is huge. This is very, very significant. They're saying, we shouldn't even be talking about this. Parental rights are fundamental, and the parents decide what's best for their kids. So here we are today. So public education is compulsory in the United States. By law, our children have to be educated. Thanks to Mike Ferris and the HSLDA, homeschooling is a viable option, but many people don't choose that. It may not fit for them, for their family. Our children went to public school for many years, and for most American families, that's what they do. And this is what they're teaching. So you're forced to send your child to school. You may be a Christian, a Catholic, a Jew, who believe that we're all created in the image of God, that our biological sex is determined by God at creation. It's immutable. It's unchangeable. God created them male and female. And you send your child to school, and they teach them the gender unicorn, which is completely neutral. The brain is thinking about rainbows. I could go on and on. Or they're teaching the gender-bred person. You know, that what you are biologically on the outside doesn't necessarily have to match what you think you are in your brain, and certainly doesn't have to match how you might feel you are in your heart. The curriculum, I think Maria touched on this. These are the books that are in the kids' libraries that are being actively read to small children by teachers, where they're basically saying, you know, doesn't matter what you may look like, what your parents may tell you are, if this is the way you feel, you can be different. You can be a boy if you're a girl, and vice versa. And now we have school policies, and I've spent a lot of time researching these, and I've been shocked because I figured, you know, as I go, if I research policies in the Midwest, it's rural, it's conservative, it's Christian, certainly these are everywhere. 77 million children are in the public school system in America today. 77 million children. And these are the kinds of policies that are going into place. Teachers and students are being compelled to use the pronouns which do not align with the student's biological sex if the child says, you know, my parents call me Billy, but I really want to be called Sally, and I want you to refer to me as she, her. Or, you know, Sally comes and says, you know, I actually really want to be known as Ace, and I really want you to refer to me as they, them. And so teachers, Christian teachers, who feel like this violates their faith, are bringing lawsuits. We've defended Tanner Cross here in Loudoun County because it violates his faith. He doesn't want to lie to a child, to a little boy, and tell him that he can be a girl when that's impossible. We had a lawsuit filed, not by ADF, but by an ally of ours in Wisconsin, where three male students were punished and had to undergo disciplinary action under Title IX because they misgendered another student who was a girl but said she wanted to be a boy, and they were still calling her a girl. And so there was disciplinary action taken. And of course now, I mean, you're hearing about students who are competing in sports, using bathrooms, locker rooms, staying in the same hotel room on overnight trips, based on the gender that they identify as, not on their biological sex. And this is based on school policies that are being adopted in local school districts nationwide. So you could be sending your daughter off to a track meet overnight, and there could be a biological male who identifies as a female in the room with her, and you would have no say about that. This is a big one for me. These policies require teachers to maintain separate, confidential files for those children who identify as the opposite gender. These files are kept separate from the public information file that's part of the main school database, and they're told to keep them separate so that parents don't know they exist and don't have access to them. So we have a federal law, it's called FERPA, it's the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And under this federal law, parents have access to their child's educational records, period. Okay, but these policies are giving teachers permission and in some states requiring them to keep these separate files. Part of these files are these confidential gender support plans. These plans were developed by an activist organization called Gender Spectrum, pushed out through training to all of these teachers and school board members to adopt these policies. And it's a 7-page document. And it goes through, well, what do your parents call you at home? What would you like to be called at school? How do your parents feel about your new name? Should we call you by your new name when we talk to your parents, or should we not call you by your new name? What should we say when we call home? And they're giving the children the right to determine what the parents know. And they're using this, they're creating something that doesn't exist, which is the minor child's right to privacy. And they're saying that this 5-year-old, this 6-year-old, this 12-year-old, they determine what information is shared with the parents. That's problematic. This is what the form looks like. It's hard to read up here. You can just Google Gender Spectrum, Gender Support Plan, and you can read through it. It's disturbing. And I want you to listen to this video, because another issue we have is not just the policies, but we have some teachers who have an agenda.
I never tell parents, period. On their survey at the beginning of the year, when it asked for preferred name and pronouns, it also asked for what you want me to refer to you as when I call home and what pronouns to use. So then I just make sure when I'm calling home, I use what they prefer when I call home. Even if someone told me I couldn't do that and I couldn't call them whatever they want or the pronouns they want without parent permission, I would still do it.
Okay, so maybe you have a conservative school district that has policies that recognize the rights of parents to raise their children and direct their upbringing and know what's going on in their child's life. We have teachers, and not all teachers are bad. We have some great, awesome teachers who are trying to do the right thing. But you just need to understand that there are teachers who are going in, and they have an agenda, and they're going to do what they want regardless of what the policy is. Oh, let's go back. This is important. This is a sign that was recently posted on a teacher's door. If your parents aren't accepting of your identity, I'm your mom now. Just like the internet mom, Jeff Marsh, who Maria pointed out, you know, that they're love bombing your kids. They're like, if your parents don't get you, if they don't understand you, it's okay. I do. I love you. I'll be your mom now. And then what I think is important to understand is that this agenda comes from the top down. And this isn't about being Republican or Democrat. This is just a quote from the President of the United States of America. This was recently at a Teachers Award, Teacher of the Year Award ceremony in April of 2022. And the President of the United States says to all the teachers who are in attendance, they're all our children. And the reason that you're the Teacher of the Year is because you recognize that. They're not somebody else's children. They're like yours when they're in the classroom. And so teachers are starting to embrace, it's kind of a socialist, Marxist kind of mentality, that these kids belong to the state, which, if you recall one of the cases that I cited earlier, the Supreme Court's made it clear, no, they're not creatures of the state. They belong to the family. And then we have our U.S. Department of Education, Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona. Recently, he testified before the House Education and Labor Committee in May. And in response to repeated questions from Representative Jim Banks, who happens to be from Indiana, as to whether Cardona thought schools should keep a student's gender transition secret from their parents, he refused multiple times to say that parents should be informed if their child is undergoing a gender transition. So I just want you to understand that this isn't just about our local school districts, about our local activist groups that may be, you know, rising up. This is from the top down. And on day one of the current administration, he issued an executive order that basically laid out that this is this administration's agenda, is to make sure that this is the ideology that is taught in schools. Here, we'll talk more about this later, and this is something that's very important, I hope you can hang on to this, is that Title IX is undergoing they're trying to propose major revisions to Title IX. And they're trying to basically redefine the term sex Remember, Title IX, 1972 educational amendments, just turned 50 years old, was largely directed at helping women achieve fair opportunity in education and sports. It prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex. In 1972, everybody knew that sex meant male or female. There was no discussion. And so now they're trying to, by administrative fiat, not through proper legal processes, which is really the job of the legislature, they're trying to change the term sex to say that it includes gender identity, so that it will make it illegal for schools who receive federal funding to discriminate on the basis of gender identity, not just sex, male or female. And that they're going to be encouraging students to go through this gender transition without parental consent. It's not going to be required. So what rights do parents have in education? Parents have a lot of rights. You have the right to choose the learning environment in which your family's view on sex, marriage, and the family are respected, and where your child's biological sex is affirmed. So this is like choice. You can homeschool, you can public school, you can private school, you can parochial school, you can religious school. That is the parental right. You can send them into an environment where they're not pressured to accept a particular viewpoint which violates your conscience or family values, obviously including your faith. Parents have the right to review curriculum in advance. And this is something that I just want to encourage you, for those of you who are parents, and I hope those of you who aren't parents aren't tuning out, because this is really important, because you're going to have friends, you're going to have neighbors, you're going to have family members, coworkers who are parents, who need to know these things as these issues start to bubble up more and more. Is parents really need to exercise the rights that they do have, and would really encourage you and encourage others who are parents to review curriculum in advance and to take advantage of these. Almost all schools have policies that allow you to review curriculum in advance. They also have what they call opt-in or opt-out policies. I prefer opt-in policies, because then you get to affirmatively see all the different things that are going on and say yes to this, yes to this. Opt-out can be a little bit trickier, because you have to exercise it, and a lot of times you don't even know you have the option. So I know here in Loudoun County, you have the opportunity to review, for example, the sex ed curriculum. Jim and I did that many years as our kids were going through the public school for a period of time, and then you can opt your child out if that's what you choose to do. So this obviously gives parents more control over the instruction that their child receives. You also have the right to be informed and involved in important life decisions regarding your child. And this is one of the things that I think that people don't necessarily understand, but when Walt and Maria were talking about the issues of like names and pronouns, that when you start referring to a child by different names and pronouns, that's what they call social transition. That is actually a mental health treatment. It is a psychosocial mental health treatment, and experts who are honest will tell you that. So if a child goes to school and the teacher or administrator says, oh yeah, sure, I'll call you, you know, you're Sally, but I'll call you Johnny, and you're a girl, but I'll refer to you as a boy or he, him, that is a psychosocial treatment, and these schools are actually providing mental health care for children, and they're doing it without a parent's knowledge or consent. So that is a mental health treatment. So your rights as a parent are undermined when these authority figures withhold this information from you, because if your child is undergoing any kind of mental health treatment or any kind of health care, you have a right to know, and you should know. They're encouraging the child to withhold the information from parents, as we talked about. This is a violation of parental rights. Or to take any action that undermines a parent's role in guiding the child. So what you're starting to see is, and Maria alluded to this specifically, is the schools are convincing the kids that the parents are not safe if they're not affirming. And then that creates a tension and a problem in the parental relationship, and that is a violation, because that is your primary right. So here we have talking about parental rights in legislation and what's going on. So many states have introduced what are called counseling bans. And they're specifically called conversion therapy counseling bans. So this stems from back in the day when men or women were struggling with unwanted same-sex attraction, and they would go to a counselor in an effort to try to overcome this. Well, they've taken that and they've extended it and now brought in anything to do with gender identity, and they're saying that if you're trying to help a child become comfortable with their biological sex, that's conversion therapy. And they're equating it to something radical like electric shock therapy or think crazy things that we used to do that we know now are not helpful. And so they are banning counselors from any kind of talk therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy that would help a child actually become comfortable in their own body, the body in which they were born. And I think there's like 15 states. Virginia is one of them that has one of these conversion therapy bans. And so what this does in terms of parental rights is it basically says parents, so Virginia parents don't have the right to choose what they think is the best mental health treatment for their child. Maybe they think the best mental health treatment is to take the child to a counselor who will explore what's going on and help them become comfortable with their own biological sex. And that parental right is being taken away by these bans. So this is, of course, despite the decades of research and clinical studies which demonstrate that individuals actually do benefit from this. And one thing that I don't think has been said yet today, which I think is super important in this discussion, is it's not abnormal for a child at some point in their development to feel uncomfortable in their body, especially as puberty begins. And any kind of discomfort in your body is known as gender dysphoria. It's very common. Some people have it very briefly, some people may have it for an extended period of time. But what the clinical studies do show is that between 80 and 90, and I think it's actually closer to 90% of students, kids, who have expressed any discomfort with their biology will naturally outgrow that if you leave them alone. If you let them naturally progress through puberty without any kind of social transition, puberty blockers, or cross-sex hormones, they will naturally outgrow it. That's what the science and data says, but in spite of that, what you are seeing are these radical medical interventions. And there's a great philosopher at the Heritage Foundation right now by the name of Dr. Jay Richards, and he calls this the school to sterilization pathway. So what's happening in the schools is they're beginning that social transition, and then once you start that pathway, 100%, nearly 100% of kids who start with social transition will follow through all the way to medical transition. And what that leads to, medical transition, is the cutting off of healthy body parts, double mastectomies for girls. You end up sterilized. You end up not having normal sexual function. You're infertile. And a lot of other really incredible health problems. So that's what the studies show. So these laws, they mandate that counselors and professionals, many of whom you may know, be friends, neighbors, coworkers with, if they violate these bans and actually try to provide talk therapy or helpful therapy, they face the suspension, loss of their license, and even heavy fines for trying to help. And this would include biblical counselors. So then you get into some free exercise and religion legal problems. But these bans are basically politicizing the practice of medicine, they're undermining freedom of speech and religion, and they're violating the fundamental rights of parents because parents aren't able to make the choice. Wanted to talk a little bit more about this Title IX tsunami. I think a lot of my slides have gotten skipped here. Okay, so I talked about this from 1972. So this new rule, we're going to redefine sex under Title IX to include sex stereotypes, sex-related characteristics, including intersex traits, pregnancy or related conditions, sexual orientation, and gender identity. And so what does this mean for parental rights? I think one of the things that you're going to see if these Title IX regulations go through is you're going to see an increase in these gender support plans that I mentioned becoming the norm, with no requirement for parental consent or knowledge of a child's social transition, which, as I said, then puts them on the pathway from school to sterilization. This is because public schools receive federal funding, so they'll deem themselves under Title IX, and in order not to discriminate against a child who is struggling with gender identity issues, they're going to have to accommodate them. And in order to accommodate them, they'll develop these gender support plans so that everybody is on the same page and knows how they're supposed to be treating these kids. I think another thing you're going to see is that child protective services is going to become weaponized against parents who don't support a child's discordant gender identity and efforts to socially and medically transition. And I've actually seen this. There's a woman named Abby Martinez who has recently come forward to share her story. She's the mother of four children in the Arcadia School District in California. And under the Obama administration, there was a Title IX claim against that district for a trans-identified student. As a result of that settlement, that school imposed radical gender policies that, you know, mandated all the things that we've been talking about in terms of bathroom use, social transition, locker rooms, sports teams, et cetera. That school, her daughter had been struggling with depression, anxiety, was going to that school, and the counselors kind of brought her in, started socially transitioning her without the mother's knowledge or consent. She went into the school, she asked for help, she said, "My daughter's depressed, I need help." They're like, no, that's really not what's going on. Your daughter's a boy. She said, "No, I don't understand. She's normal, and she's never talked to me about these things. She was a girly girl," is what she would call her, loved princesses and all of that. And long story short, because Abby refused to agree that her daughter was a boy, the school called Child Protective Services, and they removed her daughter from the home. And the daughter was placed into foster care, because in foster care, she would have full access to puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. She was already too far along in the pubertal process, so they put her on cross-sex hormones. They made her very ill. Abby was only allowed to visit her daughter once a week for 1 hour, supervised. And they kept her in foster care for an extended period of time. Abby went to court, tried to get her daughter back. And long story short, 4 years ago, her daughter Yaley decided that she couldn't live like that anymore, and she went and knelt in front of a train and killed herself. So this is obviously an extreme story, but I'm telling you, these stories are starting to happen more and more and more, and they're coming up. And so we need to think about kind of the realities of what this ideology is doing, even in our legislation, because children are being taken away from their parents because the parents don't want to affirm what the school is saying. And as a parent, you'll have no right, if Title IX is redefined in this way, to say, you know, boys can use my daughter's bathroom or locker room or play on the same sports team. There's just so many things at risk that parents will no longer be able to control and maybe not even know about. So what can we do? We have a problem, right? What can we do to defend and preserve our parental rights? Well, like I said, exercise your right to review curriculum in advance. Advocate for these policies in your school. You have to be in tune. You have to be in tune with your school board. You have to be in tune with your school policies. Talk to your principal, talk to your teachers, talk to your guidance counselors to make sure that you understand what's going on. And from the very beginning, if it were me and my kids were still in public school, I would be writing letters saying, "This is what it's okay to teach my kid. This is what it's not okay to teach my kid." And I'm telling you right now, and I'm putting you on notice. There you go. Encourage children, your kids, to actually talk to you about what's going on. You really need to be in tune, asking your kids, "What's going on in the classroom? Tell me what you learned today. Did you read any books?" Keep the dialogue open so that you can have, you know, kind of one boot on the ground to know. You can be active before your local school boards. I did it for a couple of years before I started working full-time at ADF. I would really encourage you to speak out. If you're hearing about things, if you're seeing things, and you know that there's policies and things that are happening in your school that violate your personal beliefs, your ethics, your family values, your faith, you need to speak up about that and be truthful. And then support policies and laws which will lead to actually hold school officials accountable for when they are breaching these rights and when they are violating the family values. Oppose these counseling bans. Be in touch with your state legislatures. Be in touch with your local officials about all of these kinds of policies and laws that are just being pushed through in record number. One of the resources that I have for you, because I think getting educated is a real big part, and this is, again, this is kind of a little bit long and nerdy in terms of legal ease, but it's very informative, is a toolkit that we've put out on critical theory, and we kind of really walk through what is critical theory, what's the history of it, what is critical race theory, what's critical gender theory, what's queer studies, how all of those things are coming into the classroom, what you need to know about them, what you can do about them. This is available for download for free on the adflegal.org website. You can access it there. I'm going to put this QR code up. I don't know if it'll work, but you're welcome to try it with your phone. And this will allow you, again, to download. This is like a 27-page PDF. So, you know, good cup of coffee and a lot of time. If you're not super nerdy like that and don't want to read that long of a toolkit, if you look down here, I put the address up. We have a shorter version on our blog, and that is the address where you would find it on our website, /blog/parents-toolkit-critical-theory. And that just gives you very brief, small snippets of information, and then those are actually shareable. So if you have friends, you know, neighbors, coworkers who are having some problems, would encourage you to use that just to share, to get people informed. This, if I leave you with nothing else, I cannot stress enough how important this is. You need to make a public comment about the Title IX issue. This is going to literally transform the landscape of American culture. They are required to receive and respond to all unique comments. So what we don't want to do, right, is like create a cookie cutter comment and say, you know, you can't define sex as gender identity, it's male and female, or whatever we decide we're going to argue, because they will disregard them. So I've put up here two websites for you to consider. One is this childparentrights.org. Childparentrights.org is a small private law firm that works in the parental rights space. They're very committed to preserving parental rights and protecting children from harm. And on this website, they have created kind of a Title IX public comment section, which is wonderful. And it includes these small, you know how we have like conversation starters around a dinner table? Well, they have comment starters that kind of give you a format that to plug in and then create your own unique comment on a variety of different topics, a variety of different arguments against these Title IX changes. So I would highly recommend that. And then the next is the actual website. But if you go through the childparentrights.org, you will ultimately get there to submit your public comment. And this can, people don't think that what they do can actually make changes. This can make a difference. If they receive hundreds of thousands of unique comments from people like us who want to preserve parental rights, who want to protect kids from harm and put a stop to this radical gender ideology being applied to every public school system and affecting 77 million children, we can do it, but we all have to do our part. So I would really encourage you to do that. They're due on or before September 12th. So I would put that day in your calendar, set a reminder even, you know, 3 days in advance, and would really encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity to speak up. This is America. We're a democracy. This is a great opportunity, and they need to receive it, read it, and respond. So we have a problem. One of the solutions that we've been working on at ADF is we recently created this Promise to America's Parents initiative. And what this is based on is just defining kind of the principles that we've talked about in terms of parental rights, and that is that parents have the right to accountability, choice, and transparency when it comes to the education of their children. Accountability, when the government actually usurps parental rights, they need to be held accountable because every mother and father has the right to direct upbringing, education, and care of their children. So we've taken these principles and we've put it into this promise. There's 10, so we have accountability. There's one principle under there. And then we've talked about choice. What does this mean in terms of like the type of schooling, determining, you know, the actual instruction, being able to determine medical treatment, et cetera. And so talking about the need for parental consent. And then lastly, transparency, that parents have the right to know what's going on. They have a right to know what's in their kids' school records. They have a right to know what their kids being called at school, what pronouns are being used and when they're referring to anything like that. And so we've taken this, Promise to America's Parents, and we've created a coalition of grassroots organization, policy organizations around the country, and we're trying to rally around this. Why? Because there's a lot of really great people and really great groups nationwide doing really great work in this space. But the promise actually unifies these organizations and these people and these efforts, and it provides a roadmap. What does good policy look like? What should local school board policies be about? What should our state laws be about? And what should our federal laws be about when it comes to parental rights? And so we've set this out, getting members to rally around it. And then there's actually something you can do with this. And I'll have a handout out in the lobby when we're done. And it has the promise laid out on one side. And on the other side is kind of a top 10s to-do list for parents. So, okay, here's the promise. What does this mean for me? What can I do with it? And we give you some ideas. You know, children are going to be protected if parental rights are preserved. And parental rights, they're not just going to preserve themselves. In our culture, in today's world, we have to stand up and we have to fight for them. We have to fight to preserve them. And so we'll encourage you to read the promise, share it. You can get it on our website as well and make it shareable online with people. And then take these top 10 to-dos and take action, even if you do one thing, just one thing. That's what the document looks like there. We also have a Promise to AmericasParents.org website where we're encouraging the coalition members, it's coalition members who are signing on. And then there's going to be a section for lawmakers so that we can take this to our lawmakers and say, you know, parents need good policies to preserve their rights. So can you put the beginning of the presentation back? Because I feel like some of my slides got skipped and they were pretty important, if you're able to do that. Yeah, the biblical origin, that's really where I wanted to start. So my little clicker skipped through. So I started my time with you talking about the legal origin of parental rights. But I think it's really important as a church that we realize that our parental rights, they come from God, okay? God created the family. The family was the first institution of God. God created marriage, male and female, he created them with a command that we procreate and fill the earth. That's where parental rights actually come from. So God created mankind in his own image, in the image of God. He created them male and female. He created them. God blessed them and said, be fruitful, multiply, increase in number, and fill the earth. Parental rights include and actually require that as parents in the faith, in the Christian faith, that we raise our children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord and teach them how to live a life that honors and obeys him. And you're obviously very familiar with the Deuteronomy scripture in chapter 6, and I don't need to read it to you, but God's telling us, you know, talk about it along the way. Bind it on your foreheads and on your doorposts as you sit around the table. That's what we're commanded to do as parents. So not all parents have the option or the desire or the ability to homeschool, and so when we send our kids into other schooling environments, co-ops, public school, private school, whatever, you're kind of turning over your kid to some education. But it's our primary responsibility as parents to train our child in the way that they should go. And educational institutions are to partner with us in that. Parental rights do not end at the schoolhouse door. Okay, just because we drop our child off at the public school doesn't mean that the school gets to determine what our child learns. We have a say in that. So please, I encourage you to take those rights and duties seriously. All right, so we'll stop there because I thought that was really important. And I just want to leave you with this as we close. In the last year, as I've spent my time kind of really deep in this gender ideology world and spending hours on hours in the dark the internet spaces of the internet mom, Jeffrey Marsh, and the social media influencers, it's kind of a dark place, honestly. And the one thing that the Lord has told me over and over again is, one, you need to understand that our struggle is not against flesh and blood. Ephesians 6:12 says, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. we are in the midst of a spiritual battle. This isn't about our neighbor, about our local teacher. The enemy is at work, and this is a spiritual battle of epic proportions. And they're coming for our kids. 2 Chronicles 20:15 says, "This is what the Lord says to you. Do not fear or be dismayed because of this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. You need not fight in this battle. Take your position, stand and watch the salvation of the Lord on your behalf. Do not fear or be dismayed tomorrow. Go out to face them, for the Lord is with you." This is a spiritual battle, but it's God's. And it's our job to be available to what the Lord would have us do. We all have a role. We all have a part. Whether we're a parent, a grandparent, an aunt, a friend, a neighbor, a coworker, we all have a part. Maybe it's not your kid. Maybe it's somebody else's kid that you can spend time with and speak truth to because they're confused. But just to know that we can't do it in our own strength, that the battle is the Lord's and that he is with us. So let's go in power and in strength to fight for our kids.